The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants, price may vary.
Hello, and welcome to the Circling the Bases podcast, proudly presented by NBC Sports Edge. My name's DJ Short, and with me here once again is Drew Silva. We are live on the NBC Sports Edge YouTube channel right now, as well as the NBC Sports Edge Twitch page. So welcome to our audiences there. Just for context for our podcast listeners, we're recording this show Thursday night, September 9th. If you remember last week's show, we did a little NL East talk with Grant McCauley, who does a great job with Braves coverage. But for this week, we figured we'd hop over to the NL Central and bring in Derek Gould, lead Cardinals beat writer for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Derek, thanks for taking the time to stop by. I know it's been a busy day for you, so we're happy to have you here.
Well, thanks for the invitation. I appreciate it. It was nice catching up with Drew on the podcast we do, and so... You know, it's nice to have this chance for part two. It's an encore, right, Drew? That's what this is. We got an encore. The podcast was so good, they brought me back.
It could essentially work like a part two. We can check back in on the Cardinals, though it feels like they're kind of in the same mode that they were when we talked on the park picnic table 2 weeks ago. One thing I really liked about the way you did the podcast is like you used a recorder, like a reporter would do in a clubhouse to interview a player. And I have a habit, DJ knows this, of like talking over people, like when they're trying to finish a point or make a point. And with that method, you don't really have the opportunity to, because you kind of have to wait for the mic to come to you. It's kind of creative. I'm sure you just do it that way because that's what you have on hand. But it kind of works. It creates a good dynamic where you really have to take, you know, you get only your time to conduct your answer, you know, and then you have to listen to the other guy.
As opposed to like a Zoom thing where we just all talk all over each other.
Yeah like this show.
Yeah. Drew and I don't finish each other's sentences. We like try to start our own sentences.
Yeah, exactly.
it's awesome to have you here. I you know, the Cardinals, they dropped the first two to the Dodgers, putting them in kind of a perilous state. So to win these last two, another great start from Adam Wainwright, who, you know, I wonder your guys' thoughts. I think Walker Buehler is probably the Cy Young Award favorite, but
or Max Scherzer.
Scherzer is making a charge. That's totally fair. Yeah. But you do wonder, you know, LA, you know, did they cancel each other out a little bit? Julio Urias is in that mix too. I think he's leading the league in wins.
Yep.
Some people might still pay attention to that. Who knows? But, you know, maybe they do cancel each other out a little bit. You know, where does Wainwright fit in there? And just that we're even talking about it as a possibility.
He's going to get some votes for sure, which, yeah, it's amazing at age 40. And the way he pitches, and Derek and I talked about this on his podcast, is very unique to this modern era where he can maybe hit 92, 93 sometimes, but he's generally like 91 and is just cerebral pitcher and has this big looping curveball. There's a lot of more like power breaking balls in the game today. You don't really see the big loop, but he uses his height to an advantage and the crazy arm slot. And I think it throws batters off. Like even the best hitters can sometimes look silly against, I think you would say mediocre stuff in a way. I mean, the curveball ranks up there with one of the best pitches in baseball, and his usage of it is right up there at the top of the leaderboard too. But just a unique guy. And yeah, I think Derek had some reporting today on possibly bringing him back, or it seems like that's going to happen, or at least they're going to have negotiations here soon. Do you think that'll happen before the end of the regular season, or?
That's a good question. Probably so. I mean, I think that, you know, both sides want it. You know, Wainwright did his announcement on Big League Impact and had his family involved where he took their votes publicly. But they'd already started talking, I guess, a couple of weeks ago. He was telling me and, you know, talked with his daughter, his eldest daughter, about, you know, what they what she wanted and what they wanted as a family, you know, next year with him pitching. And were they all behind it? And he said he went 6-for-6. They all voted for him to come back. And so now it's a matter of did he give away all of his leverage entirely? Probably not. I mean, but he jokes that, you know, he's like, well, I can't just say I'm only going to pitch for the Cardinals. But, you know, Molina wants him back. He's been giving him kind of the nudges every so often. The Cardinals need him back. I mean, he's been their best pitcher. It's not like a few years ago where it's like, well, they're going to give him the chance, right? And he writes what would be the contract on the back of the napkin. He's been their best pitcher now for the entirety of, what, 36 starts? Yeah. You know, for the last year and a half, I would argue that he was their MVP last year. Maybe even deserved some sort of recognition, not up ballot voting, but some kind of votes on some NL MVP ballots, given what he did to bring them out of quarantine and get them through those double headers. And then this year is he's even better. I think that, you know, it's hard for a team like the Cardinals to say, you know, well, our best pitcher, you know, well, you know, we've got to really try to figure out a way to get him back. I'm really interested to see what the Morton deal did for what, for what, for what Adam could say, look, this is what I'm worth. He's not a guy who is gonna, you know, he wants what the market will probably give him. And he had other options last year. He had more higher options, like offers of higher salaries last year, and he returned to the Cardinals. So we'll see, you know, how that goes. But both sides, I think, don't want that to linger into October. And the Cardinals will be like, look, you know, you don't know what's ahead with the CBA. So at least here's the certainty. And they might also be at a point, to be candid, at some point this month where they might want that as a headline, you know, as opposed to, you know, playing games. Very rarely in his career have they played games that don't matter. I mean, they kind of lost, you know, I was reminded of this watching the Jeter stuff. You know, the two of them have only had one losing season, Molina and Wainwright. And even then it was really toward the end that they got eliminated. They have not played many games like Jeter where they've been eliminated. And so if that happens at some point in time, they might want that headline.
Yeah. I forget who did the calculation. Some St. Louis media person, but it was like for the past, I don't know, 20 years, the Cardinals have been in contention except for like a stretch of like 2 or 3 months total in that 20 year period. I mean, they're
that's right. 20 years. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, we're spoiled. I'm spoiled as a Cardinals fan. And I guess you're kind of spoiled to have to cover all those postseason games, but you never really get an early vacation, do you?
Not only, I mean, it's October. What's the rule around the Cardinals? October matters. And that's true whether they're in it or not. I mean, if they're in it, then you're staying in hotels. If they're not, then you're staying on the phone figuring out why they're not. So
yeah,
all the same.
Yeah. Yeah. And as far as like the CBA stuff is concerned, like, you know, there's obvious cases of why teams are going to be hesitant to make any kind of decisions or moves, which I think you guys talked about on the podcast you had. But like Wainwright and Molina are like a totally different category. Like that stuff shouldn't matter at all. And I would think we're going to see a quick resolution there, especially since, you know, Wainwright said he's coming back.
They've
got to make him a fair offer though, you know, if Charlie Morton at age 37 with a higher ERA, slightly better strikeout rate, signs for $20 million for the 2020 season.
That sets the baseline. And plus, like, Wainwright means more to the Cardinals, you know? Like,
he is their best pitcher, like Derek Gould was saying. I mean, like, and they need, if they didn't have Adam Wainwright this year.
Oh yeah.
I mean, they would be, I don't know. Yeah. The fourth place, they would be closer to the Rockies than, you know, the Reds.
So does Jack Flaherty have a chance to come back this year? I guess is the other question.
Don't really have a, I mean, the clock's ticking, right? The calendar's about to run out. You know, the conversation is, does he have a chance to come back? What can he do as a reliever? Can he and Dakota Hudson split starts? Is that something that they look at doing? That takes a lot of coordination, but with a 28-man roster, you know, in the NL, in the American League, you could do that, obviously. In the National League, a little bit trickier, for the time being, I guess, until the DH arrives. But that's kind of being kicked around. I mean, but he hasn't thrown off the mound. He's been playing catch. So he's running out of time. And, you know, there's going to be real concern as to whether to accelerate him for what.
Yeah.
The focus should be on 2022.
Yeah. It's 2022.
Before you hopped on, DJ was like, you know, the Cardinals are in it. I was like, yeah. I was like, no, they're not. But
they kind of are. They are, because other teams are. It's the same thing that I've seen over and over again, where the Cardinals are in it because the other teams won't let them leave. You know, I mean, it's like, I'm fascinated by, I mean, it's just like, it's like a, I don't want to overstate it because it's a little bit of, you know, I guess romancing the game a little bit, or maybe catering to the urban legend. But, you know, these teams, they talk about, well, you know what, the Cardinals will always be in it. Oh, the Cardinals, you know, I talk to the Brewers, I talk to members of other teams, and they're like, well, you know, the Cardinals will have that run. You know, the Cardinals are going to be there in the end. It's like these teams talk themselves into it so that then they make it happen. I mean, I remember back in 2011, this is, you know, we're in the midst of the 10-year anniversary of that crazy run they made where it was like they're 10 and a half out. And the Cardinals are like, well, we can get back in this thing. We can get back in this thing. And it was almost like the Braves were like, well, you know, the Cardinals are going to get back in this thing. How can we help them? I mean, it's fascinating to watch, you know, but it speaks to like, okay, that the Cardinals don't bail. Like, I mean, you could make the case that the Cubs, right? Cubs could have been in it, but they bailed in July. And the Cardinals just don't have that kind of, they don't have that approach. They don't have that philosophy from their ownership, in part because they got 83 wins and a World Series title in 2006, in part because they got lightning to strike in 2011. And, you know, the moment they think, all right, well, this is the season to bail on, you know, they don't, and things happen. So, you know, it's on a smaller level. It's why, like, you talk about, like, well, when will Yadier Molina play a little bit less, or when will they start looking at some of these young guys or things like that? It's like, well, they won't until they're eliminated, and they're so rarely eliminated that they just keep playing until they're told not to. And that's kind of become the ethos here.
They've had a pretty bad 3 going on 4 weeks. You know, they've won consecutive games once, and then I guess they just won consecutive games against the Dodgers, which was surprising. Yeah. But they really, they've actually made up ground in the wild.
I know.
Well, the Reds have lost 8 out of 11
again.
And the
two to the Cardinals. The Cardinals took care of that there. I mean, that to their credit, they took head to head, and they're geared up to go head to head with them this weekend. And then they got the Mets, and then they got the Padres. And so they're like, well, we'll focus on the teams that you are either in that mix that you can go head to head with. And, you know, so I mean, yeah, I mean, it's so bizarre that the Cardinals were, you know, 4 games and drifting, and now they're 3 games and, you know, I think in print tomorrow, I said they're a wallflower in the wild card race. But it's the same kind of thing. Like, no one will let them leave the dance.
Yeah. I think what's interesting about the Reds, they have 9 games left against the Pirates.
Yeah.
I guess 9 out of their final 22. So that's a big edge. The Padres schedule is buzzsaw. It's insane. 3 at the Dodgers. This is a 10-game road trip. 3 at the Dodgers, 4 at the Giants, then the Cardinals. Important series there. 3 against the Giants at home, 3 against the Braves at home, then on the road for 6 to finish the year, Dodgers and Giants. There's no easy series there for them.
Wow. And I think the Dodgers and Giants will be happy to bury them.
Yeah, yes.
The Cardinals are, they're in a rough stretch right now, Reds, which I guess that's not really a rough stretch. That's an opportunity right there. Mm-hmm. But then three against the Padres, four at Milwaukee. But then you get seven against the Cubs with a little Milwaukee mixed in to close out the year. And that Cubs team is so
a little cool. Milwaukee mixed in. That sounds like something you'd order at a Wisconsin bar.
Some cheese curds and a little Milwaukee mixed in.
Yeah.
I've never had cheese curds, and like you were talking about it. Well, isn't it almost like having like food poisoning though?
What are you talking about?
It's like, it's like almost like, is it like some kind of like milk?
No. It's basically like a mozzarella stick, but with fresh cheddar.
Yeah. It's just,
it's fried cheese.
Yeah. But you can also get, you know, just cheese curds. You don't have to fry them, and they're amazing.
It's not like
a little snap to them.
Okay, I'm intrigued by it.
It's like
cheese. I mean, I mean, I'm an East Coast person, so I've never been out that way. But I would love.
You had cheese cubes, right? You've had cheese cubes on a toothpick, right?
Of course, sure.
Yes. Okay, these are the Mercedes of cheese cubes on a toothpick. This is the filet mignon of cheese cubes. That's what
I mean. I'm sold. I'm sold. It sounds like over my pay grade, though. Like, I don't know how much are these?
They're not. You do buy them by the pound, but they are. They're exceptional. They're the filet mignon of cheese.
You get them on happy hour at a bar in Milwaukee. I'm glad we finally got some NL Central flavor on this show. DJ's never had cheese curds.
No, I haven't.
Elite East Coast bias.
I'm not saying I wouldn't try it. This isn't like a Skyline Chili scenario.
That too is great. We're going down.
Let's do this. So you actually like Skyline?
I actually do like Skyline Chili.
So
have to accept that it's not actually like chili. It's like its own thing.
I think it's labeled incorrectly.
Right. I'm okay with that. I mean, look, I mean, how many different things do we have to accept aren't what they are? I mean, I've given up my battle when people say, well, that's a lousy narrative. It's like, no, that's not how that word works.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, like little things. I mean, I've been told a team is a contender over and over again, but if it's not, it's not. They can call it chili. It doesn't have to be chili.
Right.
You know, I mean, I get over that. It's pasta. It's great.
Right. My mistake was, and I've probably told this story on this show, but I went to the University of Dayton, and like when my mom first dropped me off there, and we like went to the grocery store to stock up the dorm. And I'd heard of Skyline Chili. And so like at the Walmart or what the Kroger, wherever we went, there were cans of Skyline. And I was like, oh, I'll get some Skyline like just to try it. I love chili. Steak and Shake chili is fantastic. I make great chili too, but if you're talking about fast food. But anyway, so like one night I just pour it into a bowl and put it in my microwave. And that's not the way that you're supposed to eat Skyline chili. No. Like it's got like cinnamon and maybe some chocolate in it. It's a topping for pasta or for hot dogs. Mm-hmm. And actually some Cincinnati people, some girls especially, that would make this Skyline dip where it's like a layer of cream cheese and then the Skyline and then shredded cheddar on top with like some onions. And
maybe like a seven layer dip. Yeah.
And that is really good stuff. So I had it incorrectly. And then once I didn't always like love the Cincinnati people at Dayton. I mean, some of my best friends are from there, but there was kind of a St. Louis Cincinnati thing because the Reds were good when I was there. And so I like would never actually go there and try it correctly. So in false narratives and whatnot.
I try to get out and try the different places.
Again, I would
try not to bring any bias to it and just let it go. No, there are things I don't like, but Skyline, I don't mind. Cheese curds, I grew up on cheese curds, so. I'm going to defend the Dairyland.
I could be convinced if I ever go to Cincinnati to try it. I'll say that.
Won't be hard to find it. I mean, you know, Skyline is the most famous, but there are other options. There's Gold Star. I went to C-Tren Rosecrans of The Athletic, who covers the Reds and is just one of the best guys and best baseball writers around. He took me to a new place in Kentucky. That was called Dixie, or I think Dixie Chili. And so I tried that. Same kind of thing.
I'm intrigued.
So what is your favorite, like traveling around? Like what's your favorite, like food city?
My favorite food city? Well, I mean, there's like New York and Chicago in the National League, man. Like it's hard to beat, you know. I mean, like underrated food. I mean, Chicago's amazing for food, and New York is. I mean, if you have an interest, I mean, you know, I'm very looking forward to going to a shop next week that specializes in pencils because I can in New York. Yeah. So I'm good for that. I mean, like underrated towns for food. I mean, St. Louis is one. Drew can back me up. I mean, St. Louis is, and I mean this sincerely, it's underrated. I know that it gets attention for Italian food in the Hill, but there's a great barbecue joint on the Hill. There's James Beard winners around here all over the place where they're willing to try things. You know, the area of town where I live has something like, two dozen different restaurants. Two dozen different countries represented in their restaurants. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's an underrated kind of town just because it does allow for some creativity for some restaurants to give it a go. And yeah, if they work, they work.
Rent is cheap.
And if they don't, then that chef sticks around and then moves around. Yeah. I mean, I know of a few different locations that are all under the same person, but they've tried different things. And then they've, you know, there's a willingness to experiment. And, you know, you think of, I'm trying to go through, I mean, you know, Minneapolis has some places like that are underrated. That's an underrated town. You know, there's places, you know, Cincinnati's, you know, growing. I mean, you got the Eagle, which is a great place for fried chicken. And, you know, it's kind of like Grace Meat and Three is a great place to eat in St. Louis. So, you know, you can find, it sounds like I'm waffling, but the honest truth is you can find somewhere anywhere. Like, that's the best part is, like, if you are open to trying something or, you know, to punch in food on your phone and see where it takes you, you're liable to find something awesome in almost every town.
With spring Black Friday deals at the Home Depot, you can give your lawn or garden beds a pop of color and protection. Right now, get a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10. Help your soil retain moisture longer with color that lasts up to 12 months. Shop Spring Black Friday deals for a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Color selection varies by store. Limit 60 bags per customer while supplies last.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Pretty much every American city, I guess non-major American cities, underrated. I mean, there's great stuff everywhere and unique neighborhoods that you would never know about because they're not featured on travel channels or whatnot. I've come around on the St. Louis thing where I've kind of embraced that, you know, people don't like it and don't want to live here. It makes me kind of proud in a way. And also, I pay $500 a month in rent, you know, and I'm good with that.
I live in New York, so that's like mind blowing to me.
Yeah. I split it with my fiance. So we each pay $500, but we got a 2-bedroom and with a living room and a dining room and a kitchen.
Yeah. I remember in college, I paid $249 a month for my apartment I had one roommate. So I can kind of relate to that, but that was 15 years ago. So times have maybe changed a little
bit. Don't come to St. Louis. It sucks.
So I guess this is a good discussion as far as like the food and traveling. Just as far as like sports writing in general.
Didn't
like,
it start with us talking about Wainwright as a Cy Young contender?
I mean, this is what we do here. We don't have a plan. We're just winging it.
This is like, we keep it pretty loose.
You know, during COVID, how did you have to adjust to, because baseball's routine. Like we're all routine. Drew and I are routine, and COVID changed that up in so many ways. But for you, how did that make you have to adjust how you do your job? How much more difficult was it? Were there things positive that came out of it for you?
Curveball at the end. You know, it's always tough to talk about positives in the same sentence as, you know, sure, COVID, because there's so much loss and so much still out there that we, you know, are still dealing with. So I have to kind of tread lightly, because I don't want to give off the sense that like any positive came out of it. Some of the challenges sharpened either skills that I didn't have or skills that I had let kind of grow dull. The challenges of it were basically, I mean, it probably stems mostly from access, interpersonal connection and interaction. There is something you can get from a conversation with a person that you can get in person and in person only, and not over Zoom. I find Zooms and it's a little bit like Drew described the podcast, right? Like I find like Zoom interviews more transactional and less conversational. Like I put a question into the machine and I get an answer out, as opposed to when you talk to somebody where you can actually have a conversation and, you know, you get to a point where you're not exchanging question, answer, question, answer, question, answer. You're exchanging, oh, okay, well, this is how I saw it, or even like half sentences and letting the person fill. Or, you know, you use when you're interviewing somebody, you can sometimes use silence to a great effect, because, you know, in some conversations, that person will want to fill it. And that's when you get the best stuff. All of that was gone. And that's a key part of storytelling. And that's a key part of, interviewing. And that's a really important part of reporting. Zoom had some, but they can be hard to be confrontational, to be candid. Or at least I've found them that way. I've had myself muted when I've tried to be conf, because I don't control. Like, you know, I've been impressed thing, and I was like, well, that makes no sense. And mute, what? You know, like, or like, how do you square that with, you know, this? And then it's a different way of reporting, because there's not that in-person chance to either have somebody look you in the eye to say something and know it's not true. Or just the better parts of it where you're just not conversational. So you had to change that. And, I traveled all of last year. I went to every game that the Cardinals played, except for the ballpark that wouldn't let me in. And that was the White Sox. And they cited Chicago, policies, the city of Chicago policies, and did not let a few of us in. So we were outside for some of the press conferences and then had to figure out a way to cover what was going on inside without access to seeing what was inside. And I think that really put an emphasis on how do you report and how do you become better as a reporter? Sort of like going back to the news days, right? Like, you know, a news writer doesn't always know an event is going to happen on their beat, and sometimes they're not there to see it. So how do they report that? And, you know, we have the benefit of a schedule. I know today the Cardinals were going to play the Dodgers, and I know there's going to be an outcome. So I start my day knowing, well, at least I'll have some kind of news and something to write about. If you don't see that news, then how do you go about reporting it to get it? And that's a good reminder that, you know, you don't have to sit and wait for something to happen, that you can seek it out with phone calls or after the fact continue reporting to find out, you know, what it was like. It really put an emphasis on skills of observation. What can I see at the games I was permitted to going, what can I see that a television camera can't? And I can provide readers that way. What clue can I get to what's about to happen or what just did happen through my knowledge, my understanding, and mostly my experience of seeing thousands of games and seeing this particular team play so often. How can I utilize that to my benefit? And how can I find, how can I be creative in finding stories when there were no games to be played? There still were newspapers, thank goodness. And so it really put an emphasis on what creativity you could find to generate content. And I think those are things, those are lessons that will stay. I know like in the last few weeks, lessons of last year are really informing how I go about writing things now. I don't need them to tell me what they're going to do because I don't need to go ask because I can observe it. I can watch and write it. Because last year we didn't have the chance to ask. And we observed it and we're right. So why can't we do the same thing this year?
Yeah, I think DJ and I can kind of relate to that about having to get creative when there wasn't much going on.
Yeah.
Because we wanted to keep this podcast going. And so just every week, I don't even remember what we did. Like, I don't remember what we did in the first half of the year 2020.
I think sometimes we use it as like a therapy session.
Yeah.
Like we would just be just talking about whatever was going on. And yeah, there would be baseball in there. But I think it was also a chance to like flesh out some ideas and also just to like get more comfortable in our own skin and in our own knowledge. Because I think for myself, like I've always been someone that over prepares. Mm-hmm. When I do a media hit or like a TV thing, and like it can go really well, but I feel like that is like a slippery slope or precedent to start for yourself, where then if the first time it goes well, then you feel like you need to keep doing it, and it just creates like anxiety. So I think last year when there just really wasn't a lot to talk about, it allowed us to just relax and get better just That's about good. Having the conversation. So
yeah, if I get like invited onto a radio show and they give me kind of an outline, I'll like write up a script almost like just to put my thoughts on paper because I want to. I guess it's probably like a self-confidence thing too, but I got totally away from that during the pandemic just because there was nothing to write a script about. And yeah. And I think it made, I don't know if it created a good product for the podcast, but it made me more comfortable in. You know, you might not know everything, but it's okay to not know everything that you're talking about. Exactly. You know, you can say, oh, I don't know about that. I'll have to look into that or something. And it's okay to admit that or maybe steer the conversation in a different direction. You know, you've got to become a better BSer sometimes, too. And yes. We became better BSers during the pandemic.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think for me, you know, Drew and I came from like not the typical journalism background. So I think for me, it has been, at least in the past, like a confidence thing. Like, do I really belong here to be doing this? And I think this seeks into kind of where I wanted to go, just talking about sports writing in general. Things have obviously changed since I was in college, since, you know, you guys were in college. Like, if you want to talk a little bit about your
like 20 years before.
Yeah, exactly. But like, let's talk about those origins. And like how it would be different now. Like if you want to get started in sports writing now, like how would it be different? How would you go about it?
I mean, there's how would I go about it? I mean, I would. I mean, there's just avenues galore to get into it now. I mean, I could start my own website.
Yeah.
You know, I would start blogging, and I would, you know, I would clog emails of writers who I admired for, you know, advice. And, you know, back when I was in college, it just looked like the only way to cover baseball was in a more traditional way of covering baseball. You know, and I was at Mizzou, and on one side of the state was, you know, Bob Dutton and Dick Cagle, and on the other side was Rick Hummel and Mike Eisenbath. And, you know, the lead writers in both cases are now in Cooperstown. Yeah. And I've told the story many times. Drew probably has heard it, but I just thought like baseball writers were Supreme Court justices and my time was never going to come. I mean, I just was like, well, that's wrong on my air, you know? And he's a dear friend and one of my favorite people to read and one of my favorite people to talk about baseball with. But, you know, I mean, I'm a kid in Colorado and I'm watching This Week in Baseball and I'm hearing about a kid my age doing a newsletter that Bob Costas and George Will are signing up for. And he's going to cover Major League Baseball games and interviewing Major League players. I'm like, that is a 14-hour drive for me. like, how can I possibly do that? Yeah. And there's Tyler Kepner getting to do it. And I was so jealous, you know, of this kid that I would later meet, you know, as baseball writers. And, you know, he's just, he's one of the best guys. But I like, I can remember that going like, how do I get into this business when I don't have a license? I don't have a team in the time zone. I don't, you know, I do go to college, you know, smack dab between two major league teams. That might have been more than a coincidence. But, you know, then you're looking at up at the riders who are there, and it's like, I don't know how to get there. And, you know, do you apply to Baseball America? Well, that was competitive too. And, you know, do you try to get a job at USA Baseball Weekly and or USA Today's Baseball Weekly? And I tried. I went to the Sporting News, the Bible of Baseball, multiple times, and saw friends like Will Leach leap over me. And, you know, I'm like, what do I do? You know, today I just start a blog and go, you guys are on your own, and see if I could write and see if I could get attention and see if I could get pointers. Or I would, you know, try to find a place that, you know, was looking for somebody who was willing to work, you know, 120 hours a week and get paid for 20 of them and see if that could work. I mean, the world is opened up, and I think that's made baseball writing better because it's made it more competitive. You know, it's just, it's made it possible for so many more people, on so many different more platforms. I mean, I can think back to when I was starting at, you know, covering baseball, and I learned so much by seeing like some of the growth of, the online coverage, of like the minor leagues or of the analytics. And it was like, okay, well, look, you know, newspapers aren't exactly dabbling in the, some newspapers did great stuff, but some of the other newspapers weren't exactly dabbling in some of the analytics. Well, can we get to a, well, why not? Could I make that part of what we do? Because the blogs are having great success, or these websites are having great success with that, and they're our competition. So what can we learn from that? Or, you know, we saw such an interest in minor league baseball. So we need to do that. We need to find a way to cover that, because, you know, these other websites, I mean, you think like Purple Row with the Rockies and stuff, they're doing so well with this, you know, how do we learn from that and do that? So I think, you know, the galaxy of baseball coverage just kind of opened up a few years after, you know, I was trying to get in. So I would take a completely different route. I mean, look, I mean, my job applications were in, you know, I went to zero, you know, to what was it? Kinko's. I went to Kinko's, then Xeroxed off all of my job applications and put them in 68 different envelopes and wrote 68 different cover letters. And that would be so much cheaper nowadays. Like, I took out a loan to apply for jobs. You know, now that would just be an email, like with an attachment.
Or a Twitter DM or something. Yeah.
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 No, it's definitely,
I mean, it's way different.
Yeah. When I graduated college in 2004. And which was like a weird time because it was like right in between like the old guard and just the start of like blogs and all that kind of stuff. So I was really stuck in between. So I definitely did what you did. I put like writing samples in an envelope and mailed those off. But at the same time, I was writing at Mets blog is like where I got my start.
Yeah.
And I was doing that for fun. I was just like, yeah, like maybe some people will see this. But like that was the better path for me because it just got more eyes on my stuff than anything I ever sent out or did for a newspaper. So it's weird how that worked out.
It is a nice thing, even though, you know, it's easy to feel kind of depressed about where the industry is. But you can self-publish and you can be your own megaphone. And if you have something interesting to say and your writing's good or you know, you have interesting tweets, I guess, or an interesting voice in a podcast format, or you do videos or whatever it is. If it's interesting, it'll get seen. And you don't have to go and apply to be like a prep sports writer at a paper and then move your way up to being like maybe a beat writer for a smaller sport. And
I'm not speaking of anybody in this conversation having done that. No, not that is exactly the route that some of us
have. I mean, that was the path, right? That was pretty much the path for a long time.
I mean, not for everybody, you know, there were people who I went to college with who went, you know, straight from Mizzou to what you would call the big leagues. And, you know, then some of us didn't, you know, some of us had to, had to win batting titles at Double A and find our way up. And, maybe there's something to that. I mean, I've been very fortunate because I've had a chance to cover, you know, preps in Louisiana, which was a strong hotbed of baseball. And I got introduced to people who I would later run into again in the majors. Mike Fondo I covered, or Ryan Terrio is a great example because he became a Cardinal. Mm-hmm. I covered in high school, covered him at LSU, was there for a national championship when they won it, got to cover that. Got to deal with Nick Saban on his first day as LSU football coach. I'm better because I covered Nick Saban. I'm better because I covered LSU football and because I learned like some mistakes that, I learned how a major beat works, with so many eyes on it. And then, and I got a job or I got a chance to go home and I covered the Nuggets. So I got to see what the NBA was like. And then the Nuggets season ended and the Ray Bourque Stanley Cup run was underway for the Avalanche. And so they put me on sidebar duty there. And so I got to cover a Stanley Cup final. And then that was enough for the Post Dispatch to say, well, would you like to cover hockey? And I'm like, well, I'd like to cover baseball. Is hockey a way to get to cover baseball? And they're like, well, we'll see how well you do at hockey. Okay. So I came to cover the Blues and, along the way I covered court cases. I covered, I unfortunately had to cover like a missing person that became, a death in Louisiana. I covered a hurricane a couple times there. When I'm covering the Blues and there's a murder for hire on the beat, I had some kind of background of how to know how to do that. It is a more traditional route that I took, that probably seems old and creaky and dusty, and slow for other writers who are covering baseball because it, I was covering LSU at age, 24, 25. So wasn't that slow. And I was covering baseball before I was 30. And so not all that slow. And I had this Swiss Army knife of tools that I'd gotten from other beats, which became essential because podcasts didn't exist. Twitter didn't exist. Blogs really didn't exist though. I mean, I guess they did. We just called them differently. Like, when I started on the baseball beat, I was like, well, what can we do for the web? And I think we called them postcards or something like that then, but they were essentially blogs. Appearing on TV was not something you did. When I was at Mizzou, it was like, hide behind the byline and no one ever see your face. I mean, the joke was that you had a voice for print and a face for print. And, now you have to figure out how to be on TV. You have to, I was talking about this with one of the coaches the other day about, just having, really good people who pushed me in the right direction early on to gather skills beyond journalism so that when Chris Mad Dog Russo wants to engage in an argument, I can go Lincoln and Douglas and keep up, you can improvise a little bit and it's great. It's cool that you have comfort to do that. And I think that's what I think there's just more. It took me, going different places to find those things. Today, what's great is you have so much of that at your fingertips if you're willing to reach for it. If you want to cover baseball, there's so much out there that you just have to reach for. You don't have to, a sublease hop around to get it.
I do think that, to be successful now, it's like you were saying, I think it's automatic. Like you have to be comfortable speaking, writing, and being on camera. Like that's just the reality of the way it is. Also because like people want to know you. Like people want to know you beyond the nuts and bolts of, I think you gather more of an audience if people know you a little bit and like you. Goes a long way.
That's a great point.
It's not necessary, but definitely like personality based stuff is becoming more and more. I mean, you're like one of the best beat writers in the country. So you don't like, you don't need people to like you.
I don't need a personality. This is proven.
But the other thing you said, like the tools in your toolbox, like that's really important to being a baseball writer, because writing about baseball is so much more than baseball, especially, you know, recently, with all the, injuries, legal situations,
coming up with the CBA.
Yeah. The social, the social just atmosphere of the country. Like, you have to know how to talk about these things sensitively. So I think that's really important too.
Yeah.
I mean, I think a lot about how lucky I am to have had opportunities, to have the route that I had, where I did not think I was going to be a baseball writer. I went to Mizzou thinking that was going to be impossible. So I really studied, covering politics and did a lot of, I thought I would cover politics and cover law. That was kind of the idea, was go and cover courts, civil liberties and stuff like that. Then the opportunity that I got with the Palm Beach Post, where, they called me up and offered me an internship, and just how fortunate I got. I mean, I knew my way around a police station and how to get public information that helped me unearth some arrests that had not previously been reported. And, they also had me on the outdoors beat. So I got to canoe the Loxahatchee every so often, or go out and cover high speed race. I mean, it just was like whatever experience I could have. It's something that actually Mike Schilt talks a lot about, is that your experiences don't have to be your only experiences. You can gather experiences from watching or asking about others, And so in New Orleans, the great columnist there at the Times-Picayune, Pete Finney, told me once, he said, never take for granted a championship on your beat. Never have regrets. If you're covering a championship team, a team that could win a championship, cover it like it could win a championship, so that when you look back and they say, we want to put together a commemorative book, you go, oh man, that stuff is awful. Or gosh, that doesn't look good. I mean, think about that. I mean, I was told that as a prep writer going to cover LSU. And I mean, that resonates when you're covering the Cardinals. It's like something that Pete Finney told me over beignets, probably, talking about football, means so much to what you learn about covering the Cardinals, and what's at stake with this team. So, I mean, I think I'm super fortunate. I am definitely the sum of my mentors, not better than any of them, but better because of them.
And beyond just the work experience that you've gotten on that path, that's just amazing life experiences too. Living in different environments and putting yourself out there and being willing to do. I mean, it's a lot cooler than being a kid who's just racking up Twitter likes. You're canoeing down a river and meeting Nick Saban, his first practice at LSU. I mean, that's pretty cool.
I mean, they didn't have. I have a lot of Saban story, but they didn't have Twitter back then. I guess I am not putting. I guess I'm dating myself a little bit by telling that. But I graduated in '97. But
I think even if,
who knows,
just knowing what I know about you, even if you were a 19-year-old right now, I feel like you wouldn't be the guy who's just living in his parents' basement, just creating not that there's anything even wrong with being a kid who just uses Twitter DMs to build a brand. But I feel like that wouldn't probably be your style.
I'm a little too wordy for that. I would feel constrained by the 240. I'm being honest. I wrote a lot. I write a lot. I do write a lot. I'm a little wordy. I'm a lot wordy.
Buccaneers Cowboys, the NFL season kicked off tonight. It's on NBC. So any of our YouTube audience, go ahead and turn on NBC.
Probably should have set my fantasy football lineup.
Yeah, I would say so. All right, we're closing it out. Thank you so much to Derek Gould. If you like what you're hearing, rate and review the podcast, the Circling the Bases podcast. Follow us on Twitter. I'm at Drew Silv, DREWSILV. DJ is at DJ Short, just like spell like that. And Derek Gould's D Gould on Twitter. And thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Doers, mowing season is here with Spring Black Friday Savings at the Home Depot. Right now, you can get gas like power with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower for just $329. With a runtime of nearly an hour, it's the perfect mower to tackle your half-acre lawn without a trip to the gas station. Just push and mow. Your grass won't wait, so buy it online and pick it up in-store to get out there sooner. Get gas like power this spring with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower just $329 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.